Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Bear Boat Alaska, a pure DIY hunting game with one of their 37-foot adventure yachts. You and five of your friends can hunt, fish, set crab pots, shrimp pots, and take DIY to the next level. Bear Boat Alaska is locally owned by a Ketchikan resident who lives here year-round. Call Larry at 907-617-4542 or go to bearboatalaska.com. That's B-A-R-E. boatalaska.com and tell Larry you heard about it on this podcast. Welcome back to the podcast. I have Chris Alderman for a second episode. Thanks for being on here, Chris.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate the opportunity, buddy.
Chris, the co-owner of Screaming Eagle Archery, they have two shops, one in Wasilla and one in Fairbanks. The Fairbanks one was open, was it this summer was when taking that one over?
We did that one, like official open was first week of November, so we've just now made the year.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. Yeah. So you were in the first summer season when I was up there. Wow, that's crazy. How was the archery business?
It's been great. You know, the Fairbanks guys jumped all over everything, and we were pretty fortunate to get loaded up with some inventory up there, trying to get everybody what they want. But as you know, that's close to a lot of good fun hunting up there.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. What's been kind of the biggest, I guess, challenge here in the different cities? Is it pretty much just you open it up and there's people that want to get in with it, or are you finding there's a different style, I guess, between the two shops and the cities, or what are some of the differences you're seeing?
There is. It's pretty funny, actually. We shuffle quite a bit of inventory back and forth, but we've got like a monstrous family environment here in Wasilla, but we've got a range. So we've got, you know, kids' classes and leagues and lessons and a lot of stuff going on. And then not having a facility there in Fairbanks yet, you know, you got to come in, Jeff, and see that it's just a, you know, the smaller retail and a little service area. But so we haven't even gotten to tap into that. But most of the guys up there are extremely arrow specific.
Oh,
everybody up there is after some of the nicer, fancier arrow stuff, be it the shafts or accessories and whatnot. So. Not as much as that down here in the valley. You know, everybody's just kind of a basic, let's get going. And up there, it's arrow specific details. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Have you found that it's kind of a reflection of maybe, I guess, the level where you have more people who really know what they want? They've spent a lot of time shooting arrows, and so they know exactly what they want. Right. Or is it just this is kind of the cool hip thing, I'll get it?
I think it's really a little bit of both. There's a lot of guys up there very detailed. They've been doing a lot of stuff for themselves for a few years, just not having access to a crazy amount of inventory with a local store or something like that.
Right.
And then a lot of younger military base, you know, all those guys coming in. I can't remember how many people they brought on. I want to say it was like 3,500 new guys come in, families. So those guys are very specific in what they want based on quite a few podcasts or, you know, YouTube hunt shows, stuff like that. And they've seen it and heard about it being successful. So that's kind of the direction they want to go. And then, you know, down here in the valley, we got, you know, you got a dad coming in with a couple of kids and a mom or something like that. And they're just like, yeah, give me some pretty good stuff and some nice sharp heads. So
that's,
That's cool. Completely different. Yeah.
Do you see more specificity when it comes to the actual shaft or the tips or what?
It's the whole package up there. We're doing a lot of micro shafts, like a 4mm or an FMJ, and even getting into some match grade stuff up there. But then having your collars like from Ethics or from Iron Will, somebody like that. So we're putting a footer on that, adding some strength and some weight, and just getting super fancy with every little detail. It's been fun to get into that because we just don't have a lot of that down here in Wasilla, you know. So we get to build some pretty awesome arrows. It's really a lot of fun to do that up there.
Yeah, when I was starting out, a buddy of mine was talking about just finding something that kind of works and then shoot that a whole lot. And then once you kind of experience stuff, then you can figure out maybe something else that you want, in a bow, and then also everything else that you're looking at. It was the same sort of thing with fly fishing. I bought one of those $60 kits and it, you know, cast it like a 2x4. And then you get the best bargain one, and then you think, okay, well, I want a little bit faster action, and so I can appreciate what a Sage would do or what one of those premium ones would do. It's a little bit more complex, I think, with archery, because it seems like the model turnover is a lot faster in archery, whereas I had a Sage. Like the Z axis was the one that I really wanted. Then they discontinued that after 3 or 4 years, and there was the replacement for that. I bought a Sage VT2 and I loved it. Then they discontinued it, and it was hard to keep track with what the replacement was. So if I wanted that same rod, maybe in something else, it's different. And now I can't even find I have an Elite Ritual, and I can't even find those. Like how quick do they turn over the names?
So typically, I mean, this year was a little bit of an exception. Not very many changes this year, and then it felt like Hoyt made just like they abbreviated the name. You know, they went from a Venom Pro to a VTM. There was minor riser changes, stuff like that. But typically, those names are going to change on your high end bows. They're changing them every year, introducing a new model every year. You know, Matthews is typically somewhere around November 15th. Hoyt's bounced around with some October stuff or an end of the year, and then everybody else is in the middle. But yeah, it does. It changes every year. Your flagship stuff is getting an update or a change or something's coming. So
how do you keep track of the names? Or if you're in the marketing, like, okay, what do you kind of with another name? Man. I mean, this is a cool name. We have the Phase 4, the image, the...
Right.
Monster Safari. I mean, just that's Atlas Prima. Like, this is just cool words, you know. But man, that's got to be tough for the marketing folks to come up with new words.
Yeah, I don't know how they do it. And it seems like for the last couple of years, everybody's been on V's. You know, Venom and Vertix and VXR and V3. It's just been it's been a wild ride with the V stuff here lately. But yeah, that's not something I'd want to be in charge of.
Is it difficult then when you're recommending a bow, because the name doesn't really mean anything? You have to look at, I mean, is it cost or what is it that really is separating some of these, you know, good notable brand, your Matthews, Hoyt, wherever? Is it just a price range thing? Is it a component type thing? It's a little bit of each. Like, how do you decipher the different types?
It's components. So your flagship stuff is all, you know, the best offering from whoever. Those are going to be your higher end stuff. Your mid-grade bows, those names and stuff like that don't change a whole lot, but you start to lose, you know, plastic components or traditional cable slide to a roller guard, and you're just getting the best offering on the top shelf bows that those manufacturers have. Normally it's dampening upgrades or new cams, a new riser, something like that. So it's, man, about the time we get everything memorized and know what's what, they go and change it again. You know, it's a new year.
Yeah, got to keep you on your toes.
That's no shortage of that.
Do you see some sort of new technology come out sometimes, or how often does new technology come out that ends up being a little bit too gimmicky and then ends up fading out after a couple of years because it doesn't have, it sounds really cool and people buy into it, but as far as staying power, just doesn't have that. Does that happen very often?
Not that I have experienced, not as much. No, I feel like these guys have, I've always wondered, you know, if they've got these, I'm sure they do. They've got them cooking for 3 or 4 years before they let some of that stuff come out where it's got all the tweaks are worked out of it. You know, like with the phase four right now, the biggest thing I'm getting is, you know, you've got that dampening system in between the limbs. I don't know if you've looked at that a whole lot, Jeff, but the new Matthews has got a rubber dampener down the middle of the limb. So now you've got two limbs, you know, per side, per corner, basically, with a rubber dampener in the middle. So everybody, especially in Fairbanks and stuff, is like, how's this going to hold up in extreme colds?
Right.
So I'm sure those guys have put that to the test, but we're working on doing some of that ourselves. We're going to see how that system holds up. And then, of course, the carbon bows. You know, you've got a new carbon bow from Bowtech and Elite now competing with Voigt's carbon bow.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to see how those guys hold up to that extreme cold stuff.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference. A lot of people come up here and they will test their gear on an Alaska trip. So they took their tent up for 5, 6, 7, 10, however many days in August when it's not, you know, brutal. Yeah. But what's the difference, or is there a difference in the wear and tear? If someone buys one in Wasilla and is right now, it's what, 5 degrees or 10 degrees, if they're shooting it, you know, outside when it's really, really cold, is that wear and tear, is it more exponential, or is there a difference? Someone that might be shooting down in a warmer climate all year and then come up to Alaska versus someone who's shooting it in harsh climates year round?
I don't know about the longevity of that. You know, it's something that we're starting to play with quite a bit. There's some guys in town there in Fairbanks that have said, you know, they see a lot of differences after being out in the extreme cold for 3 to 5 days. They're seeing, you know, like on a haul road, crazy winter hunt or something, they're seeing differences in the field with accuracy and arrow flight after those bows being out there for a while. So that's kind of a field test that we're starting to play with here in the next couple of weeks after the holidays. We're trying to put something together to see what it actually does, you know, for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't noticed much here in the valley, you know, in Wasilla, but it's definitely been colder here than lately.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some pretty low temps here for a while, but
yeah. Did you get a lot of the snow? Like Anchorage had a horrible snowstorm. I mean, it's when Alaskans complain about the snow, then it must be a lot of snow. Cause we'll it's, you know, a nuisance sometimes, but, it's pretty crazy sometimes.
You know, we're lucky out here. You know, Anchorage, you guys just can't go through and plow the streets, right? That's got nowhere to go. So that's a whole different show there. But yeah, we got almost 4 feet with all those crazy storms. I've been here since 2008, and I've not seen that much snow that fast that early. I thought it was a blast. Me and the kid had a blast, but it was definitely not fun moving around. And of course, they were out of school all week, so they loved it. But,
yeah. You start thinking about the impact, you know, with a couple bad winters for sheep and for moose.
Yeah.
If it's gradual, you can kind of, you know, they can maybe figure out themselves. But do you see kind of a difference? Are there, you know, moose just frantically looking for a Fred Meyer parking lot or
yeah, you know, there's a lot of moose on the roads. Yeah, there's a lot of moose on the roads here and hanging out in driveways and yards and on the streets just trying to get a break. And then I was actually talking to an older pilot friend of mine today. He's got a nice cabin out behind Talkeetna some ways there in the mountains. And
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911, and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
They didn't have a lot of bears last year, where he sees tons of bears. He just didn't see that much last year. And it's kind of the opposite of what's happening this year with the snow. But with the snow and the warm-up and the freezing again, he thinks that quite a few bears got stuck in the den and died in the dens. Mm. And we were just talking about what the snow load was going to do to that, you know, do to them for that again. And the past couple of years, Unit 16 has gotten quite a bit of snow, and there's just moose kill everywhere, winter kill. You know, you go for a snow machine ride and see some moose, and then on the way back, you know, a day later, they're laying there in the trail dead.
Yeah. It's amazing just to think how, obviously, this isn't these last couple of winters have not been the first bad winters that the species have all survived so many ebbs and flows of that. So you think, all right, well, we'll probably pop out of this. Our impact, or it is different because you're going to have, you know, the roads where things are going to get hit more, and you're going to have predators and humans and hunting and all that sort of interaction. But yeah, it is pretty amazing. Right. I was watching a reel on Instagram because, you know, I'm an intellectual.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah. And I saw, I don't know if it was I think it was a cow that just got its legs taken out. Cow moose got its legs taken out, kind of flipped over the top of the vehicle, and then ended up walking off. But those things are terrifying because you knock out the legs, and then hundreds of pounds just lands on the top of the vehicle.
Yeah, moving at that speed too.
Have you had any close interactions?
No, we've been pretty lucky. I mean, I hear quite a few guys, and I know some guys. My dad and them, they've known some friends of theirs. It's had moose interactions on the roads, coming through the windshields and over the hoods. But we've been fortunate to not have to deal with any of that stuff.
Yeah,
man, they are all over the road. So crazy here, yeah. Jeff. It's definitely a lot more this winter.
My aunt and uncle live in Wasilla. My aunt was telling a story about how, I think she was coming back out from Anchorage into the valley, and a moose just ran out and like jumped over the hood and then kicked the quarter panel with its back hooves. And so she was on the phone with insurance, and, you know, of course got some insurance lady down in wherever.
Yeah. Right.
And said, yeah, you know, moose jumped over the hood of my car and then, you know, kicked it. And so there's some damage. And the lady was just like, ma'am, you can't be calling in. This isn't a joke. This is for serious.
Right.
And she's like, no, seriously, I'm in Alaska. These are the types of things that happen in Alaska. Yeah. And it took her a while to kind of get convinced. But yeah, it's just a whole thing. We don't have that around here. We have black-tailed deer that we might see on the road every once in a while. But yeah, those big ones, that's a whole different ballgame.
Speaking of Instagram, yeah, I seen your little comment there on the temperatures you're having to deal with too, huh?
Yeah, we get maybe a week a year where it gets into the 20s or so. So we're not, we don't do teens very often. So we've had a couple days where we've been in the teens and things are not running great. We've had power for the most of it, which is great. And, you know, haven't had pipes freeze, but some other people have been pretty rough. We're just not built for that. Our infrastructure is not meant for that. It's a lot more the rainy and 37 and, you know, an occasional week in the upper 20s. So it's been rough.
Yeah, some friends of mine in Tennessee, they're fixing to deal with a couple of days of sub-zero, which seems odd to me, but.
Yeah. I think Wyoming is getting some, and they have all that wind too. So that's just brutal. Right. Negative 20 with wind chill of whatever it is. It's just.
Yeah, that's rowdy.
Yeah. Mom's down in Tucson, so she's doing okay.
Nice. Soaking it up.
Yeah. This time of year, do you start thinking about, do you get out during the holiday season or anything to go warm up, get a little warmth? And
previously, pre-Rona, we did quite a bit. And we're going to hit ATA, Archery Trade Association. That's coming up here like 11th through the 14th of January. It's not much of a break. And of course it's in Indianapolis. So for some reason, I'm sure it'll be colder and snowier there than here, but that seems to be our luck.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, holiday stuff and all that. We're trying to be here for everybody and our customers and taking care of everything. You know, you got a lot of kids bow sales. So all those presents are going out and then they're coming back in, getting set up. So typically 6 weeks, first 6 weeks of the year, we're basically busy doing the work that we've been selling for the last 6 weeks. Yeah. So.
Do you go to a lot of shows, or is there just one or two or things you focus on? I've always thought about going to, you know, SHOT Show or some of these other kind of things as a way to, you know, connect, network with other writers, podcasters, things like that. But I think, man, like a lot of the stuff happens during the summer, and it's pretty nice to be here during the summer. I think SHOT Show is in January or February, but I don't know. Do you go to many of those?
We've Well, I've not been to SHOT Show. So the way our trade works is Archery Trade Association, you got to be a part of NABA and a shop. So that is typically like your second week of January. We'll hit that. We'll go network, see all our guys, because there's not very many reps that come up here, and there hasn't been in the past. So we'll go see everyone there, look at some new stuff, get our hands on it, and then, like you said, do some good networking, have a good time, meet some people. That's your big one. Then in typically middle of February is NABA show, which is National Archery Buyers. That one is historically has been in like Reno. We've done that one time, but that winter time there, we're pretty busy here indoors. Never had the time for SHOT Show. And then, like you said, it's springtime, summertime, and we're not leaving here much during then. So, yeah. Typically just the ATA is the one that we shoot for, because it's historically it's been the most active with everybody there. So
how have those things changed throughout the years, or have you been going long enough to really measure or look at a difference in the industry?
Yeah, we've been doing this for since 13. So I've seen it really high, peaked out. There was some really good ones like Nashville and in Louisville, Kentucky. That one was a lot of fun. It seemed like there was more people there than, you know, in the Indianapolis one. It's kind of funny. It seems everybody almost complains and wishes it was in Texas or somewhere, you know, other than Indianapolis in a January. But 2020 was the last time we went, personally, my wife and I. Had some friends go last year, but we didn't go because of, you know, all your corona stuff. Yeah. But it seems that now everything, all your big companies, like I don't think Matthews and Hoyt's going. So some of your bigger bow companies and accessory companies are just not even going to be there. Hmm. They've been able to find a way to offer all that stuff, you know, offer your sales and your specials and your buying discounts and all that just through the computer, over the phone or whatever.
Yeah.
Other than not getting your hands on the stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of sucks, but
I think I crushed the dreams of one of my students. She was talking about how she wants to be a professional hunter, and she was talking about some of the hunters that she looks up to, and I thought, well, I gave her like way too much information. I said, well, what you have to do is you have to think about where the industry is going to be when you are, you know, 4, 5, 6 years from now, because 2013, right, it was, you know, when social media was proliferating, there used to be all these brands who would have ambassadors, and the ambassadors, they'd look for the ambassadors. And now with so many people sharing stuff on social media, they can get free marketing from people who just want their stuff to be shared. And so in order to stand out, and like right now, the influencer, it seems like the influencer space is saturated with people who are just, they have numbers that don't really mean anything, and then you're having, you know, so what is it going to be in a couple of years? And so I said, it's going to be important for you to be able to not only just, you know, take photos, but be able to write and be able to create and be able to fill whatever void is necessary. Otherwise you're going to be running an old program that's not really relevant anymore. And she's kind of looked at me like, oh, all right. I'm sorry. I think that's way too much. But I told her, I'm thinking about the same sort of stuff with writing, and you know, what's going to be the next platform. What's going to be the next, you know, thing. So podcasting, I mean, everyone has a podcast now. There's still tons being added to it. So, you know, standing out in a meaningful way, being yourself, like who you talk to, like that sort of marketing plan is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, I remember those guys talking about, you know, it's not going to be on, you know, cable TV or satellite TV or anything like that. It's all going to go to just your computer base. And that's exactly what's happening. You know, like the Mossy Oak guys have their own thing where you can just get in and look at all the hunting shows. You know, YouTube and those guys are getting rid of a lot of it because it's, you know, you hurt somebody's feeling over it. Mm-hmm. So everybody's gotten going to their own thing.
Yeah. I was thinking today about how many TV shows are still going that I don't even know about. When I had cable down in California, I'd watch some of the outdoor channel, and there'd be some shows, but I don't watch that anymore. It obviously still exists, but in my world, I haven't seen anything like that. Bill Dance or any of those things forever. You know, the bass fishing, the whitetail hunting. I don't see any of that stuff. If someone happens to go whitetail hunting, but it seems like I'm not watching anything that is east of Kansas. and there's so much just about Western hunting and Alaska hunting. I just don't have the time to, or don't want to even
sit around and look at it.
And then you go on YouTube and it's just feeding you the same stuff. It's not going to throw you some Alabama whitetail hunt because, you know, there's plenty of other stuff to be watching. So it's crazy to just think about how there's no gatekeepers. And so it's crazy.
Yeah. You just got a world of shorts and you check out a 30 second highlight reel and you got the gist of what happened and you know, you're moving on, going to the next one. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
it's definitely different.
Do you, you think about where we're headed and, obviously it's a great time to be an outdoors person, like the technology with hunting and optics, and it's just gear. I mean, so such a great time to be a hunter. Are you excited about the future?
Yeah, I kind of get stuck on what are they going to do next. You know, with the bows and the arrows and all the gear stuff you've got out, it's like, man, how does it get any better?
Yeah.
I'm kind of excited to see, you know, something cool and just groundbreaking, but at the same time, I have no idea what could be done or even what guys are working on to make it better. It's definitely wild because it's gotten so good in the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah. And they've already used
all this stuff.
They've already used the term bomb proof and game changer so much that, like,
even pay attention.
I don't know what the new term's going to be. Yeah. There's a lot of marketing that goes into it. I found that some of the stuff that I've used a while ago was cheaper and better. When during rut, I use just a pair of Grundin's bibs that are waterproof. Right. I mean, they're going to, so you can sit down wherever. If you need to put your knee into the side of a hill as you're going up or you slip and fall, it's going to be fine. If you need to kneel as you're taking care of a deer, you know, you're going to be dry.
It's hard to beat that.
And then I have an old pair of Cabela's Zones jacket and pants, and it's kind of heavy comparatively, but it's, you know, keeps you dry and it's warm. Yeah. So some of that stuff, that layering stuff that you can't really, if you're either wearing all of it, but if you do need to vent a little bit, if you're hiking, it's just not quite as convenient. So I don't know. So when I'm hunting rut, I'm using old stuff. I'm looking like an old timer
straight off the fishing boat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've tried all that stuff. I don't know. Like you said, you know, want to go layering, there's 17 different pieces of clothes you got to take, or just carry something nice and warm in the rubber is definitely the way to go, it seems.
Mm-hmm. I see the Moose program up there is a lot of waders. Just the rubber stuff doesn't really matter a whole lot. Have you found there's a piece of gear that was kind of, I don't want to say game changer, but really made a difference as far as how you hunt or how you were able to hunt or stay warm or dry or anything?
No, I haven't. it's going, I tried everything. Jeff and I went right back to what you did, you know, that the windproof, waterproof, rubber, you know, your Grundins, putting that stuff on. We've been out fishing with some fancy gear, hunting with some fancy gear, and you look around at what all the guys are wearing that live there, and they're wearing the same thing you're talking about putting right back on. I think it's hard to beat that. It's, you take so much stuff and hope for the best, and then when it doesn't work, you know, you've spent all this money on a lot of stuff that's just mediocre.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest gimmicks that hasn't worked out is anything that's called guide wear. I've never ever seen a guide wear guide wear. It just seems like someone that's like, ooh, this is guide type quality. And then you wear it on the charter and it's brand new looking and the guide's wearing something else. And there has to be a moment where you're like, oh, wait, you don't wear this? Oh, I paid $100 extra bucks for this.
Right. I'll probably get chewed on pretty good for it, but it's kind of like the term pro staff. It just kind of makes you roll your eyes and go the other way.
Yeah. What constitutes that? Right. And that's,
I don't know.
What are the qualifications? But
not a whole lot.
No.
Not a whole lot of anything anymore.
No, it's weird. I wonder if there's going to be a consolidation of things, if the market's going to kind of swing back to a more, hey, let's look for some different voices or some.
Right.
And it seems, too, that you got, a lot of the, you have so much more information out there. So there's so many different hunts that are available to people, which is awesome, because then you can say, oh, that I'm not as intimidated. I can go down to Wyoming and I can hunt elk. That's great. All I need is a couple points. I can figure this out. There are the resources out there. I can figure this out. And this is awesome. But at the same time, it starts to become, you start to look at your resume and look at all the stuff that you haven't done, compare yourself to other people. And the people that are big in the industry that get the pro deals or whatever are the ones who have this prolific hunting experience. But the average person can't afford that. The average person might be able to, if they save forever, you know, get one dull sheep hunt.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
There's quite a few guys that move here just to try to make that happen, you know, for the cost of that. And that's something that I've never gotten into, you know, being from the South and then moving up here. Some of the points things in some of the states where, you know, like elk hunting is something my wife and I'd love to do. It's high on the list of to-dos. But every time you start looking into another state, it's, you know, well, you got to have 12 preference points. And I'm like, all right, well, how do you do that? Oh, well, you got to put in for 12 or 13 years. And then by then, you know, it's probably going to be 18 points. Yeah. So it's like,
knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Man, I'm not even going to be around that long. Like, what are you, you guys are going to want to have 20, 25 points. And
yeah,
it's kind of mind boggling and it's almost irritating, but
yeah,
some of the opportunities that you can't get into.
You need a time machine. That's step one, get a time machine, go back, start buying those points when you're younger, when you can afford it.
That's a fact.
I think part of that is I was, once I became aware of what else was out there, I really wanted to do as many hunts as possible. And now just kind of being aware of what's out there and the impossibility of some of those hunts, it's really made me appreciate kind of what I have here. So I'm kind of glad that I fell for that a little bit. And now I'm like, man, I get to do this. I get to do blacktail hunting and I get 4 tags per year. And this is a money hunt. This is such a fun, this is a great hunt. And there's nothing at all wrong with specializing in your local hunt and just knowing that.
Right.
And so then you start to see some of the big names in the industry that they specialize in one thing and they love it. And you don't get the impression that they are just, oh man, I really wish I could have done this epic hunt or my life is lacking because I haven't done, you know, 26 animals. Guys like Robbie Denning, who, I mean, he's mule deer all the time, you know, and maybe done a cool this or that hunt, you know, Brady Miller, some of those other guys that just, this is what I love to do. Corey Jacobson, just all about elk. And that's, it's like, hey, you know what? It's okay. It doesn't mean that you're less of an outdoors person or you're less marketable or whatever. You should be less happy because you only get to hunt whatever is around in Alaska. Like that's all time opportunity.
And that's a conversation we almost have here daily. You know, you get a lot of people that are just here or they're just fixing to be a resident and they're excited to get out and do some hunting here in Alaska, but they get stuck in that thinking they have to put in for the draw tags. And I have to explain to them, like, no, you can still get a tag. You might not have a special zone or a special date or, you know, like an any ram tag versus trying to get into something, you know, nice in some of those other zones where you got to be on the full curl side of stuff or just an any bull tag or you know, instead of brow tines and stuff like that, you can still have the opportunities to get here local and go do your stuff. there's quite a few guys that talk about the elk down by you. I mean, do you guys have good opportunity to see any of those things, or are they as elusive as it sounds?
It's pretty tough. That's a tough draw. I drew it once before I really knew anything. And now I would probably much more likely to spend money on a fly out to go blacktail deer hunting just at a different lake or something like that. But I think, well, why? I mean, there's some good stuff around here. There's going to be more pressure, but it's over the counter, save a ton of money, and then, you know, go up north and do caribou or something like that. So it's
right.
Yeah, it's really helped me focus, and it took a little bit of, you kind of go down that path, and you then reel back and think, hey, man, you're not missing out. If you have the chance to maybe draw a mule deer in Wyoming, then do it. You know, that's the only place that I'm getting points is Wyoming, because I don't want to.
Okay.
Right. That whole Idaho thing where everyone is posting their story about waiting, you know, being 65th, 5,000th or whatever in line, and, you know, just signaling to everybody else that you're also putting in for that, which is why so many people are, you know, because it's, you start talking about Idaho or this or that, and it's like, hey, man, I don't want to get caught up in that. You know, just really got to appreciate, because I don't want to fall back in that. I want to keep this appreciation for, you know, getting $2 in 30 days of hunting. That's fine with me. That means that I was out doing a quality hunt that people love to do or would dream of doing. And I get to do that 30 days and 2 days I was successful. Yep. So I have to be happy about that.
Yeah. I've only had the opportunity for that on Kodiak, which is, man, that was such a good time there chasing the deer. Deer is one of my favorite things. Definitely good times with that.
I'd love to. I've never been there, and it just, the terrain looks much different than Southeast. It looks pretty rugged, but you can see so much more. When you're hunting rut around here, like, you can't glass. You're getting to a muskeg, and so you're looking 40 to 50 yards at most, but it's just these little, like, pocket areas because it's just dense forest. Yeah. So up there, people hunting in August where it's, you know, there's a lot of it's really thick and tall berry bushes and alders and whatnot, but you can still glass and see. And the alpine up here, you can do that for sure. But then once they drop down into the trees, man, it's tough. There's no,
yeah.
Like, you bring the binos and put them on your chest just so you can kind of see through the woods, because they can kind of blend in a little bit. And you see something that's bedded, or you're looking for eyes. It's just so thick, so you need the binos for that. You're looking 30 yards in front of you. But yeah, I think the Kodiak hunt would be a pretty cool one, and it's pretty popular now.
It's a good time, yeah. And see, I've not been down there with you guys. I've not been to Southeast, so just going from all the stories and stuff I see down there, trying to draw an idea of how fun it looked to be.
Yeah, it's Alaska's such a big state. It's hard because you can't do all these things. It's not just a matter of driving. You know, if you live down in Colorado or something like that, you can get all these pocket full of tags and just spend a lot of money in gas, and that's so cool. But man, Southeast is just not connected. So, you know, if you're in Anchorage, you can drive down the peninsula. You can go up north. You can, you know, we flew into Fairbanks, did the Hall Road, and came back, and that was.
Yeah.
Crazy drive, beautiful, epic, but, you know, you're crossing through a couple different game management areas and looking at what's available. That's a lot of fun, but Southeast is – I don't hear a lot of people from up north coming to Southeast. I hear people up north going to Kodiak, but there's no reason to go to Ketchikan or Sitka when you guys got Kodiak.
That's a fact.
What's your main hunt? Is moose kind of the big one that you do?
In the past, we've spent a lot of time on moose. This past year, Jeff, we didn't. We just wanted to focus on the caribou stuff. Mm-hmm. But I know you went with a friend of yours and had a good time up there. So I hunted the Hall Road mid-September after Labor Day weekend. Man, we had some gorgeous weather. I mean, no wind, no rain, just bluebird days. I could send you some pictures. It's just insane up there. Lots of opportunities and caribou around. We had some friends of ours with us, Amber and Craig, and they got some bulls with their bows, had a good time. My wife and I and my daughter, we were all hunting together for the first time up there on caribou. Lots of close calls, but no shots fired. So learned a lot. That's definitely different up there, being in that open tundra, trying to get after the animals and use the terrain, as you know.
Oh,
but
that was
brutal. Had the opportunity to go back for a one day in the wintertime in October and just, man, at the animals everywhere. That was insane. But I didn't capitalize there either. So lots of learning this year on the caribou. I think I'm going to shoot for that again next year as well.
Is it more of a local hunt in September, October? It seems like that's not the time when seems like maybe mid to late August is when you get kind of maybe the peak lower 48ers or non-resident hunters.
Right. Yeah, I don't remember the exact date, but I'm pretty sure it's right there. I want to say September 10th, somewhere in that. After Labor Day weekend, it goes to resident only, that was our plan, is to go after the non-residents were gone. I think we seen two or three trucks hunting the whole time.
Oh, wow. Nice.
We didn't do a lot of driving. We were close to the river and found quite a few caribou that we were after every day. And not a lot of driving around, a lot of hiking around, having a good time and trying to do a little exploring and a lot of learning. So
yeah, that was crazy to be up there, and just the lack of caribou was startling. And then you drive all the way up to Dead Horse and you think, well, where are they be coming from? So like, if this place is just going to be all of a sudden swarming with caribou, they got to come in from the east or the west and then funnel down this way or something. It was crazy. Right. They weren't even like off in the distance. And we did the hike past the 5 mile boundary. And once you get north of those foothills, like, there's no texture. We thought that there'd be something, but there was just nothing. What we thought was a nice little, you know, maybe house sized with a garage, single story, sized mound ended up being like the size of a kitchen table. Cause you just didn't get any depth perception or frame of reference.
So. Oh yeah. Everything's just so flat and open.
Oh, it was horrible. We thought it was about 2 miles away and it ended up being a couple of hundred yards away. And we get there and think, dude, there's nothing. This is not a glassing knob. This is just a small piece of just dryness. So that was, and we didn't see anything.
Wow.
So, we ended up coming back and gotten more to the foothills and some of that texture and saw a couple more, but a lot more people too.
Right. Yeah. And we, same thing, when we were up, we had some friends of ours actually take a little boat up and they jumped in the river and went to the 5 miles out. Cause one guy's just a rifle hunter, doesn't have his bow stuff. So he, you know, had to get out of that 5 mile and they ended up seeing a pile of muskox.
Oh yeah.
But they couldn't hardly find any caribou. Huh. So
yeah, it was cool seeing those things too.
It was a wild.
I figured that, you know, they were there, but it hadn't really registered. So when we saw one, dude, there's one right there. And then there's another one. And there's the little ones are awesome. They just.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't
they it? They are really cool. Yeah, so we saw, I don't know, probably a dozen of them over the trip. And then some bears and a couple of caribou. Yeah, it was just an amazing trip. And then just the drive going up over the pass is something else.
Yeah, we got to the top, man. It's pretty cool. It was some sheep up there running around.
Oh, really?
When we went over the top, there's a little bit of snow up top, and there was some sheep on the side of the road. So it was unexpected. You know, my daughter, it was pretty cool. I mean, we're just rolled the window down there. You know, they're 10 feet away to take some pictures of them. That's pretty awesome.
Probably a couple full curls, right? Because it was closed.
No, they were just they were just slams and used. Mm. But yeah, no, nothing with any fun stuff on it, of course.
I can't imagine doing that during the winter. Those truckers, man, coming down that either side of that is just
It was a wild ride.
Yeah. Did you stop in Coldfoot for the buffet?
Absolutely.
Ah, man, that's how can you not? Because the stop before that is way before. But man, that's I don't know if I would do that again. But part of me thinks it would be kind of neat to just kind of fish the way. But definitely got to take 2 to 3 weeks, I think, and just because it is a lot of driving.
It is, yeah.
But
I took the girls up. So I, you know, working for Cat when I first moved up, I worked for Caterpillar here in Seed Machinery for a while. So I worked up there a lot and got to know some guys and a few of the companies up there. So I'd been, but I wanted to drive up and my daughter was interested. So we actually, you know, from Wasilla there and back, she's done it. And it was pretty cool to see, and we seen a lot of caribou, a lot of fox, the muskox. Mm. We didn't see any bears. Mm. So we had a good trip, a lot of opportunity. Her and I, my wife, belly crawling and army crawling and having a good time, and just, you know, just into that zone. I needed to get her like 60 yards or so, and we'd get into 80, 90, you know, some 70s on these, and start getting really excited, and you know, get busted or one of them sees us or something like that. But we tried to keep the driving to a minimum, but we did go to the top, man. We had a fantastic time up there.
Yeah. What's your camping program? Do you have an Arctic oven? Or we saw one guy that had a full on canvas tent and had some firewood stacked outside. I'm like, man, this guy's going pretty big. And we saw that he had his wife and kids, like, oh, this is a big old This is a this is a comfort camping program, family trip. That's awesome. Yep.
Exactly. We did. We took I scored a while back. I found it here on Marketplace or something years ago. It was a Montana Canvas builds the tent. And it's a canvas style, but it's a wall tent with a synthetic floor. And we did. We took the wood stove, we packed our firewood, and tried to keep nice and dry, because, you know, you never know what you're going to get. But, man, we just ended up having great weather. And, I mean, the mornings were pretty chilly and cold with some frost, but it was awesome.
Yeah.
That's what we took. I've not been around the Arctic oven stuff a whole lot, but there was a few in the group. So.
Yeah, there's when you can have a little bit of potential misery or a little bit of harshness, it just makes it pretty rich. I don't want crazy survival stories. I'd rather not be the right. old guy with a bunch of those. That's fine with me. But it is kind of nice to be kind of close to that edge and waking up with a little snow around or something like that. But yeah, I'm not out seeking hardcore. Yeah. Or anything.
No, we were pretty lucky, man. We had a couple of trucks going up, Jeff, so we had, you know, toppers. Nice. And we took way too much stuff and tried to spoil the girls, and yeah, we had a good time. And I mean, it's, you know, I blame it on that. I say we're spoiling the girls, but I sit around a wood stove any night. So
yeah, absolutely. That's so nice. Forest Service cabins down here are awesome to get a hold of if you can get them rented. And right. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with overpacking. Nothing wrong with being totally prepared.
No, I agree.
Well, man, what do you got pitch-wise to close this thing down here? Can people find you online? Where can they sign up for lessons if they're in Wasilla or actually you don't have them in Fairbanks yet? But where can they find you?
We're getting there. So we're working on website upgrades. We're trying to get that streamlined online and get caught up here. Still a little old school. Just give us a call here at Wasilla Store. Craig's coming in instructing. We've got Judy. She's running instructor stuff and homeschool classes. We are working on a lesson schedule for Fairbanks. We're trying to get in there. Golden North Archery is the local club there in town. Those guys are great with us. So if you buy a bow in Fairbanks, you get a year membership with them if you take them your receipt of the purchase.
Cool.
So those guys are in. They've got a nice indoor range. They're running some leagues and trying to keep things going there and give you somewhere nice and warm to shoot. So we need to fill their club up and support those guys. But Wasilla, give us a call. Like I said, Fairbanks, we're working on that. And whatever we can do, you guys just give us a shout. Reach out to us any way possible.
Awesome. And then social media?
Yep, we're on there. Not a whole lot. It's kind of drives me nuts, but it's part of the gig. We just don't get on there a whole lot. But you can message us on the Facebook. Fairbanks has its own Facebook deal. Wasilla's got it separate so that we can keep track of who's who. Instagram is all one thing. As soon as those things ding, we see it on the phone or the computer there. So we'll try to get back onto that as much as possible, but taking care of the customers in front of us at the time.
Nice.
Email, of course, is simple, but we still like the traditional phone call so that I can just yak and get a voice in my ear and talk to somebody. So
nice. Well, thanks, man. Mm-hmm. I appreciate your time as always, and good to hear from you and good to chat.
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah. Appreciate your time, buddy.
Take care.
Spend your Saturdays with life on the water. Join Captain Brandon Simmons for fishing, diving, travel, and so much more.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Oh, look at that thing, dude.
Wow. Oh. Let's see what kind of trouble we can get into today.
Don't miss Life on the Water every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment. Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.